This is Peter Orman, 93.3 CFMU. Welcome to Green Sense. And we're listening to Undercurrents. And this is Contact performs the music of Jordan Nobles. This is all made in Canada. We try to use as much Canadian content as possible. So Green Sense every Friday from 2 to 3 p.m. This is 93.3 CFMU. Today we have a guest, Anne Bruce, who's a lawyer. Anne Bruce is a member of the Law Society, and she was called to the Bar of Ontario in 2008. So, Anne, thanks for joining us today. And you want to talk about, your situation. Maybe you can give us some background.
Yes, thank you very much for having me here this afternoon, Peter. I really appreciate it. Well, I'm here in the Hammer, born and raised in the Hammer. Called to the Bar 2008, September. And I put up a shingle here, was practicing as a sole practitioner, primarily in the area of family law. I had clients in Toronto and Cambridge, and I represented clients also in Hamilton, in the John Sapinka Courthouse, and down the street at the Unified Family Court in Hamilton.
Great.
Yeah, and I was under the impression that I would, you know, have a fair hearing before the Law Society. Unfortunately, it's almost a year later since the Law Society served a conduct application and a motion for an interlocutory suspension. And I don't think that most lawyers would be aware that it's almost now a year that I haven't had an income in my chosen profession in lawyering. And I think it's extremely unfair that the Law Society hasn't dealt with me in a fair and expeditious manner. And one of the tenets of the rule of law is the fact that the law is supposed to protect everyone and treat everyone similarly. We're supposed to have freedom from coercion. I was arbitrarily threatened that if I didn't admit to these allegations, that I would be disbarred,
right?
Which is completely harsh and excessive.
So are you appealing that challenge, or are you, like, I guess you're going to explain to us what's going on.
Yes, absolutely. With respect to the rule of law, I just wanted to mention a couple of the basic tenets of the rule of law. One of the tenets, there's 12 basic requirements of the rule of law. This is a concept that embodies fundamental expectations for decision-making in a democratic society. And the application and enforcement of the principles of natural justice is one of those basic principles of the rule of law. And when someone is denied a fair hearing and they're denied due process, that constitutes a breach of natural justice. So in this instance, I've had this application served on me half a year after I had, on behalf of a former client, brought a recusal motion due to the problem of a reasonable appearance of both real and perceived judicial bias.
Right.
And then I was subject to an immediate complaint to the Law Society, which would seem like a knee-jerk reaction. And so now here I am in December, almost a year. I've lost almost 12 months of income. Interim restrictions have been placed on my very small practice in December 2010. And in February 2011, there was an interlocutory suspension imposed as well. And I feel that the Law Society should compensate me for a year of lost income. It hasn't made its case. It relied on unverified false allegations. It has no factual foundation for the allegations that it used in reliance to impose an interlocutory suspension on my law license.
So is there a mechanism to appeal or challenge this?
It's most regrettable that an appeal would require me to appeal before a five-member panel at the Law Society.
Right.
And so what that means is that the peers of the persons who impose my suspension, they would be presiding over my hearing. So that's an administrative body. The Law Society is similar to the College of Physicians and Surgeons for Physicians, and they regulate lawyering in Ontario. It's unfortunate that it's lawyers regulating lawyers which isn't necessarily done to advance and promote the public interest.
Right.
That's the way it's you know, espoused, as that they're supposed to promote the public interest. But in fact, when we have lawyers regulating lawyers in the same market of legal services, we have benchers who are similar to a board of directors who have a dominant position in the market of legal services.
Right.
So that means that their firms almost never and are very rarely disciplined. So in a sense, they're almost immune, which doesn't advance fairness in the field of lawyering services.
This is a challenge. Like someone like me, even though I have taken some, like two postgraduate courses in business and engineering, I don't know the language of the law. And that's almost a, like legalese I've heard people talk about. It can be a challenge for the average person to understand what's going on. So I guess if something isn't right within the system, then the average Joe, the challenge is, how do you get other people, make them aware of it?
Yes, that's an excellent comment, because this is happening because the Law Society has effectively contained its own administrative proceeding. And the members of the public who would be outraged at what's going on in this case, they're simply not aware, or they're not being presented the information objectively and cautiously. It's being told through a myopic lens, through the Law Society. My name's been unnecessarily mentioned in convocation in the Law Times to try to cause me embarrassment, and also to try to get me to capitulate.
Right. So is there a deadline or time where you have to make a decision or take some action by, or... I just mean, or do you have to, I remember you mentioned that you have to maybe accept terms of what they're saying, or like is there a timeline associated with what's going on right now?
No, there hasn't been a timeline.
Right.
For example, part of the problem is that the expectation is that that I would, last December 2010, perhaps that I would be overwhelmed by the volumes of transcripts of proceedings. But in fact, I wasn't really overwhelmed. I was just, shocked at the scandalous and inflammatory allegations, which were completely unverified. So there hasn't been a timeline. And that's part of the problem, because the Law Society, in reviewing and researching other disciplinary decisions by the Law Society, male lawyers receive differential treatment from female lawyers.
Right.
And it's my position and my view, and it's backed up by cogent amount of evidence, the Law Society's own hearings, that they treat female lawyers and male lawyers quite differently. In my own hearing, I was told by one of the panel members from Border Ladner Gervais, he referred to me as a halfway house. And this was very insulting. And this insult is improper, it's offensive, it's without any factual foundation, and it's indicative of the disrespect and scorn that the chair panel felt entitled to use to speaking to and about me. So I think that the fact that we have a bencher from Border Ladner Gervais, Mr. Christopher Brett, engaging in name-calling, which is one sign of discrimination, I think that it brings disrepute to the administration of justice. And I think it's a real disservice to the Law Society when their own members of the panel are seen as behaving improperly towards a young female lawyer, a new call to the bar. Female lawyers, I've researched, have received the harshest and most extreme penalties available to the law society, interlocutory suspension and eventual disbarment. But at the same time, male lawyers who have engaged in similar conduct received a mere reprimand or were allowed to attend a regulatory meeting to discuss the problem, while other lawyers were not even investigated or subject to any discipline action of any kind. So part of this problem has been this initiative by a former treasurer named Derry Miller. He created this civility complaints protocol, and it's been subsequently misused as a means of pursuing an egregious policy, suppressing fair criticism and fair comment of judges by lawyers in Ontario.
Right. So has anyone else challenged or been treated in this manner as well, or also try to challenge how they're being, how they're being treated?
Another lawyer, several lawyers actually. One lawyer in particular. She has subsequently been mistreated as well. And her name is mentioned in my human rights complaint against the Law Society and against the Director of Professional Regulation, Mrs. Metsanip Onan. And it's very, very regrettable that she's been completely targeted. The Law Society has told her, we are going to make an example out of you. Hmm. And she is a lady of a heritage, from a non-traditional background.
Right.
Her heritage is Caribbean, and she's explained to me that civility was used in the Deep South to discriminate. It was used as a form of discrimination.
Yep.
And we're not living in the Black South. We're living in 2011.
Yeah.
And her case is discussed in detail in the human rights complaint.
And is that any of that stuff available online? Or how, if somebody, a listener, was interested in finding out more, could they access it somewhere?
Presently, it's not publicly available because
right.
it's been filed with the Human Rights Tribunal of Ontario.
I see.
Yeah.
And is there a timeline for when they'll, make a decision on that?
No, there's not. No. There, from my understanding, I've never ever made a human rights complaint before, so this
right.
is my very first human rights complaint.
Right.
And my understanding is that there's not a timeline on it.
But I mean, even the previous one you mentioned. Yeah.
Actually, she hasn't... filed one, but her case is one of the cases that has been studied.
Right. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So part of the argument is that discrimination on the basis of gender is deeply entrenched in the law society, the courts, and the justice system as a whole. My case and Ms. Elsie Peters' case, it's merely an example of how discrimination on the basis of gender manifests itself in connection with a particular policy or initiative, institutional discrimination against women. The Law Society feels free to over-discipline women in a harsh and discriminatory fashion. The Law Society chose females, unmarried sole practitioners of limited means, with clients of limited means, often on Legal Aid Ontario, as it is expected that these people would simply capitulate. And this is consistent with the Law Society's general practice of discriminating against disadvantaged groups in disciplinary proceedings. This reflects an institutional bias and an inherent bias in the legal profession.
Hmm. You know, just listening to you, I even sense some of the parallels. If somebody has some legal challenges and they don't have the resources to stand up and represent for themselves, like, to the best they can, then often that's the disadvantage as well.
It is, and it's one of the problems with the fact that there isn't access to justice for certain people, actually for a large segment of society, often for financial reasons. They can't simply afford a retainer for a lawyer. There are programs designed to assist people in those situations. Legal Aid Ontario is one of the ones that comes to mind first. And it's regrettable, too, because if someone doesn't qualify for Legal Aid Ontario, which is the case with a lot of people, if they make a modest amount of income, but they're not considered under the poverty line or
right.
under the guidelines for Legal Aid Ontario, they can't get what they might consider effective counsel to represent them, and that's not fair. If someone, you know, how can someone represent themselves when they don't know the system that they have to use?
Yeah, exactly, and that goes back to the language of legalese, or it's actually in a lot of professions. You know, I'm reading a book. It's called The Tao of Physics, and it talked about how the Eastern philosophy, everything is a whole, but in the Western philosophy, we've, through science, we've kind of segmented all these things, and therefore we don't see the connections. And that, therefore, I guess it's good for different sectors of our culture, but ultimately, we have some challenges in saying, hey, come on, let's be real and fair.
Yes, and I think with this kind of profession, much like the example you drew upon, Canada is one of the very few jurisdictions in the world that has a legal profession that self-governs and self-regulates itself.
Oh, really?
Yes, that's correct. There's simply so much potential for internal abuse.
Right.
And for obvious reasons. They don't do this in the United States. They don't do this in England.
Hmm.
What would be needed to effectively have objective oversight so that there's some accountability, there's transparency to the public and to lawyers. There are over 43,000 lawyers practicing in Ontario.
Wow.
What is needed is for to have a third party, the government would need to step in. There simply isn't a system where someone, much like an ombudsperson, could come in. There is actually no union to represent lawyers, despite the fact we pay substantial premiums.
I heard is it $1,800 a year?
Actually, you know what? It varies depending on your practice.
Okay.
For example, folks who practice in real estate, they have to pay real estate levies as well. I maintain that the Law Society, it should be required to fund a public inquiry into its entire disciplinary department and all practices and all discipline procedures to expose and then correct the flaws in this self-governing, self-regulating agency, which does, from my view, permit institutional discrimination and continues to in an abusive manner. In my case, it's especially it's especially harsh.
Yeah.
You know, I am self-represented. And, for example, when I was before the hearing panel just this past November, the panel refused to let me cross-examine the Law Society employees that had three affiants, and that's not normal. I am entitled to cross-examine the people who made these affidavits, and they arbitrarily and capriciously denied me that.
And who's making that decision? Was there a chair of the panel, or is there an actual judge over, like, watching both sides?
Yes, it's an administrative panel. It's a three-member panel. So these are lawyers making this decision, and it's my position that the panel, I sought to have them recused, to have them removed because of their behavior, and they refused to recuse themselves.
Yeah.
And now they are seized of my case, and they preside over my file every time it comes back to the Law Society. So I'm going to bring a motion to stay, because they were with unflattering zeal, they were in a great rush to find me guilty of professional misconduct, alleging that I had been rude and had been discourteous, alleging that my tone was argumentative, all matters that the public would not consider to be very important. In fact, in its own studies, the Law Society considers these trivial. So how could something that it deems trivial merit a disbarment or interlocutory suspension?
And it's ironic that, I'm not a lawyer. I have some friends that are lawyers and some relatives. But, a lawyer is supposed to be able to articulate what's just or not, right, and interpret the law. So it sounds like that's what you're trying to do, and that should be your right.
Yes, and I agree that there is some irony to the fact that this hearing is extremely unjust, and my position as an advocate to zealously and fearlessly defend my clients and to protect their legal interests, which is supposed to be paramount to protect the public, that I would be further stigmatized by having this disciplinary proceeding, which was quickly elevated. So I think that it's extremely suspect that this hearing even began, and the fact that it was brought immediately after I sought to have the Honorable Justice Cheryl Lafrenier, the judge, the judicial complainant, she had made a complaint after my client had sought her recusal off her family file.
Yep. Okay. So, hey, have you brought this story to, or has any other media followed this story?
Yes, other media have been very interested in the Honorable Justice Cheryl Lafrenier, especially when they realize that this is a judicial reprisal. I had said that I had told a reporter for the CBC who was very interested in the story that, you know, that there's this concept of judicial immunity where, you know, the judge in the position of a witness and as a complainant is immune. So they can make allegations of misconduct and allege that a lawyer's complaint a lawful complaint to the Canadian Judicial Council, which appoints federally appointed judges, they can allege that's uncivil. And then the Canadian Judicial Council shares this information and they misuse this information. The Law Society uses this as a pretext to suggest that it's somehow wrongful to, you know, make a valid and lawful complaint and allege that it's threatening. So I told this to a CBC reporter, and he was quite interested in it. And I guess I won't mention his name.
No. I think that's what we like. There are so many parallels when I'm hearing you today. Like, I'm not familiar with the law system, but I know that I see a small independent or business lawyer trying to make a living, and then I know if you were with a big firm, then this wouldn't even be an issue. And I think that's maybe a trend that we have to recognize across all parallels of the system right now. And I don't know if can we just I just have a couple ads to play on the radio here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, so this is 93.3 CFMU. This is Peter Ormond, your host of Green Sense, every Friday from 2 to 3 p.m. And we have Ann Bruce, who is a lawyer and a member of the Law Society, and she's talking about some challenges she's having with some aspects of the system. And this is important that we're talking about different things. And in many ways, I heard someone say yesterday, it's like the Robin Hood dialogue. You know, it's important, like Robin Hood was green, and he wants the best for everyone. And I think that these separate voices have to be heard because there is a common thread to what we're hearing. So I'm going to play a couple ads from on the computer here.
Tis the season to be merry.
Oh, you'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Merry Christmas, Mr. Potter!
Merry Christmas.
Happy New Year to you! In jail!
If you're really Santa Claus, you can get it for me.
Ho, ho, ho.
If you can't, you're only a nice man with a white beard like Mother said.
Just don't understand Christmas, I guess.
We're here to celebrate Kwanzaa.
So I came presents. Sending Christmas cards.
Kwanzaa 7 days.
And decorating trees and all that.
The Grinch hated Christmas.
But I'm still not happy.
The whole Christmas season.
The both of you can try spin the dreidel for tongue kisses.
No matter what community you're a part of, we're there for you. No matter what holiday you celebrate, we wish you the best of it. This is CFMU, redefining radio in your community.
Those icicles have been known to kill people.
The Friends of CFMU card is here. For only $30, you can help support local businesses, community radio, and get great deals too. 30 businesses offer discounts and special offers. 30 deals for $30. Go to cfmu.mcmaster.ca/promotions for more details, or call 905-525-9140, extension 27208.
Friends of CFMU are all over town. If you're in Westdale, use the card at the Runner's Den, My Dog Joe, the Westdale Cafe, Westdale Florist, or on McMaster's campus at Willy Dog, or with our new friends at MSU Underground Copy and Design.
Peter Orman back with Green Sense and guest Ann Bruce. So, Ann, you wanted to articulate a few more points?
Yes, thank you, Peter. Thank you for those folks who are listening this afternoon as well. I would like to just say just a couple more points about the judges' civility protocols. And I would like to point out that the Law Society did not tell the profession that any criticism of a judge, whether by way of recusal motion, lawful complaint to the Canadian Judicial Council, or other valid legal mechanisms, would be automatically considered to be rude and merit serious disciplinary consequences. I can tell you that in December of 2010, I was told by a member of the Advocate Society who had agreed to help me that I could possibly be disbarred, and I was coerced to capitulate to allegations which there's absolutely no way that I was going to admit to because they have no factual foundation to them. And I think this causes a chill to lawyers. lawyers must be free to argue a real or perceived reasonable appearance of bias in order to protect their clients and in the interests of the public. Scrutiny is the only defense against judicial excesses and other violations of the administration of justice. In most cases, lawyers are the only group able to make an appropriate assessment of whether criticisms or other challenge is warranted. And as an officer of the court, I can tell you that the lawyer has a duty to act when they perceive a violation. And given the importance of the democratic principle of robust discussion and the independence of the bar, lawyers must be free to raise concerns and be able to do so without fear of reprisal. As a governing body for the legal profession, the Law Society is the last entity that should be punishing lawyers for doing their jobs and protecting clients and acting as a public watchdog for violations of the administration of justice. By applying the judge's civility protocols to punish me and other lawyers, such as Joseph Groya, in retaliation, the Law Society has fallen into serious error in contradiction of its fundamental purposes and ultimate mandate to protect the public.
Wow, this is powerful. And, I don't know what to say there. I guess you probably miss being a lawyer, and what are your goals with this path now?
Yes, well, my goal is to get reinstated in the province of Ontario. And given the level of animosity evidenced through this disciplinary process, I am seriously looking towards sitting for a jurisdiction in the States. Hmm. I'm considering other American jurisdictions. I did go to school in the United States in a joint degree program in Michigan. So I do have an American degree that I could use. I can't see how the Law Society, given this such excessive and harsh proceeding without having, cautiously proceeded in investigating it, I can't see how there can be any sort of functionality given the Law Society's mistreatment of me. Hmm. And they would definitely have to compensate me for a year of lost income.
Right.
It's inexcusable.
That's right.
And it is quite simply, they've been very ruthless with me. And people who have attended my hearing have been completely horrified by the treatment of the panel towards me.
Like other lawyers and people of all stripes.
Yes. And moreover, the Law Society, given that these hearings are public, they seem to be very concerned about who's sitting inside my hearing. Hmm. These are public hearings. They're open to the public, and there is supposed to be transparency. So if they are accountable and if they are behaving with the dignity and respect they're supposed to, they should be much less concerned about who's sitting in and listening and watching them than they are about anything else.
So is there a hearing coming up, another hearing?
Yes, the resumption of the hearing will continue. I will be able to call witnesses, and that is going to continue in the middle of February, and then for a further 2 days in the beginning of March of 2012.
Hmm. So this structure in Ontario, is this common like across North America, Britain, each province? Like, what are the other states like comparable to Ontario?
Yes, well, in terms of governance, of course, there has to be governance of lawyers, but there is a federation of law societies in Canada, and they help coordinate activities for the different jurisdictions in Canada. The American system is quite separate and disparate from the Canadian system, and each state has its own board, and they have their own bar, and they have their own a lot of states have their own constitutions. They've got their own different procedure rules. They've got their own criminal codes. American jurisprudence is really quite different. Law is code-driven. It's much less reliant on case law, although we both get our systems from the common law, British system. I was privileged enough to have a comparative legal education where I was crossing the border every day to sort of enriched my Canadian education. But in terms of governance, though, specifically self-governance, I think that there is just rife with potential for attendant abuses, especially because, theoretically and in practice, we shouldn't have our peers regulating us. There shouldn't be fellow lawyers regulating fellow lawyers. you know, in a court system, we don't even have that. We have a judge presiding over the dispute. So why would we have a different setup for an administrative tribunal? And moreover, it's really problematic that we've got the Court of Appeal and the Divisional Court in the same building at Osgoode Hall.
Right.
That in itself is a problem. Like, it's unbelievable when I tell people that those courthouses are located at the Law Society. They can't believe it. And it's really regrettable that this obvious conflict of interest, which the public can recognize, the Law Society does not. And the tribunal's office should definitely not be under the same roof as the Law Society. They're supposed to be at arm's length. So that's an obvious problem as well.
So if somebody wants to find out more or stay in tune or get in touch, or what do you suggest they do? How can someone find out more about the situation?
Yes. I know time is very limited and we're all extremely busy, but if anyone was really interested, the public may not be aware that any member of the public can request a copy of the record of a discipline proceeding from the tribunal's office. And that is public information, subject to, of course, any publication ban that may be imposed. But any member of the public can attend at the premises at the Law Society.
Hmm.
They can attend at those offices. They can make an appointment, and they are allowed to view people's disciplinary hearings.
Right.
They can hear the hearings. They can read lawyers' disciplinary file. You know, the information that's available from the directory. It's regrettable that it's actually not entirely accurate, because sometimes it says that there's no discipline history, when in fact there is.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, okay, thank you for sharing. Well, this is, I know there's a lot of implications with what you're saying here. And this is where, when we were speaking earlier, I just thought of the parallels with the greater good and the greater world out there. You know, and our generation now is trying to, we want to make the world a better place, a fairer place. And when we met upstairs on my way to get a coffee, I met a man that's here doing, he's very involved with the Occupy movement, and he's also buddies with Noam Chomsky. And we talked about Noam Chomsky, who was the who was mentored by Bertrand Russell. And Bertrand Russell's papers are here at McMaster. And then Bertrand Russell and Albert Einstein created the Einstein-Russell Manifesto that resulted in the Pugwash Conference, that was a global movement to get scientists together to discuss the nuclear challenges of the modern age. And I just think of all these links together. And what you're taught, in so many ways, it seems like you mentioned the democratic principle of robust discussion. And in many ways, the Occupy movement is trying to do that. It's trying to bring attention to some of these systems that maybe they're legal, but maybe they're not fair. So we have to kind of review. And I think of, like, every area right now, this is happening to the, like, a small pharmacist, like Natural Health Products Group, right? There's a movement where the government is going to try to push them away from actually being surviving, because they can't afford the accreditation for their products. It's going to be cost prohibitive to survive. And then I think locally, like, the solutions now are we have to rediscover the power of local communities, and with that is small businesses. So we have to break the big corporate model that has us paralyzed. And in many ways, to me, you might be that in the law profession. Like, you're not the big, the big mega law firm, and you're just trying to say, hey, let's be fair here.
No, that's very true, actually. And quite honestly, I think I'm just one of a very few people who got caught up in this civility complaints protocol.
Yeah.
And it's my understanding, from what I've been advised, that it was really done with a view surrounding a very prominent, highly respectable securities litigator named Joseph Roya, who successfully defended the geologist John Felderhoff in the BRIEX mineral scandal.
Oh, right, right.
So I had the privilege of sitting in and observing and listening to Mr. Roya and his witnesses, and I was very impressed with him. And each day I really grew to admire his intelligence and his dedication towards his case. And I just found it remarkable that this very highly respected, very successful litigator was being accused of having an argumentative tone, that he was accused of being uncivil and rude, because I didn't hear any of that from anything that I heard sitting throughout his hearing. And his case has been heralded as the most important case with respect to the civility agenda. You know, I think everyone's case is important, but I think maybe I'm just a little small fish that got caught up with this, you know, this bigger initiative going on. And it's regrettable that, you know, they did not consult the entire profession when they decided to spearhead this civility crusade. I also heard one of Mr. Gloria's colleagues and former one of his former colleagues, Pierre Roy, discussed this notion of civility. And his opinion is very inconsistent with the former treasurer, Derry Miller's opinion of civility. And I tend to agree with his opinion. There seems to be an evolving sensitivity, you know, sort of trying to escalate civility as the most important issue, when it's not. There are much more serious, much more pressing issues, you know, when lawyers really do constitute a harm, lawyers who have engaged in opprobrious conduct, unethical lawyering. And this issue of civility is near the bottom of this priority list, and it shouldn't be used as a mechanism, you know, to retaliate against lawyers.
Well, maybe that's part of the learning here. And that's you know, I always back to the Occupy movement. Like, the challenge is, like, the fact of, like, people are being have been ejected from the sites, but the reason why they're there has totally been downplayed. And I think that's one of the most important movements of our time. And that's what this gentleman was talking about tonight. Like, Noam Chomsky, who's so respected, he'll fill Hamilton Place in a second. He's, like, right in there with the Occupy movement. He thinks this is, like, the most important movement right now of our time. And then I see what you're doing. Like, I think you're part of that. And even locally, let's think locally, we have two mega corporations. We have a bakery and a processed food business that are prize new businesses up the mountain. Like, to encourage urban sprawl, we have these two community-killing businesses, when what we should be doing, on the other hand, we're saying, okay, we got to support local bakeries, local coffee shops, you know, the local butcher shop. Let's reinvent these communities. But on the other hand, the system is still out of step with that reality. So, yeah, how do we get there? Through education awareness?
I think through grassroots awareness and efforts at the community level. I think that's where it's starting.
I know. You're right, it is starting. And maybe this is just the challenge of our time. The system has worked up until now, but, you know, do people look in the mirror and do they watch Scrooge every Christmas and say, hey, I see the parallels with my life and what I'm doing? Do you think that happens?
It's quite possible. You know, I think people may see aspects of Scrooge's personality, and he's such a character that you know, even if you're very unlike Scrooge, you have, like, pity for him. There's aspects of him that are universal with all of us. So, and it's a classic Christmas tale.
That's right. And that's what I've been challenged with for so long, is saying, how can I, through some of my what I spend my time on, how can I get people to tune in and say, "Why, my gosh, I'm linked to that."
Yeah.
In some way. And I think what you're doing here is that opportunity.
Yes, I think, you know, we all have to give back to the community. And I think it's extremely important that we try to participate in community-level initiatives.
Right.
You know, there's a lot going on in our local community. and with the Occupy movements too. There's a lot to learn rather than sort of just judge them for, you know, for what they're doing outside. We have to look at the reasons behind their actions. Like, what's the reason that they feel so strongly?
That's right. Yeah. It's like being in a choir as well. Like, I used to be very active in with choral music as well. And it was just beautiful, the blend of voices. When you're in there, you know that not everyone is perfect, but the sum of the parts is a community that's working together.
Yes, it's true. And there's something so ephemeral and so validating and rewarding about choral singing, because you are part of a group and part of a bigger sound, and it is quite lovely for the audience too to hear that, because you know when you're singing the choral group, you don't really hear the balance of voices together. But
and it's so interesting too. People, I was right into it for so long, and then I kind of stepped away, but I felt so good when I was doing that, and better than playing a sport or whatever, and maybe because I was part of that community, and I was doing something that, like they say, singing is the best thing we could do. Sing like no one's listening.
Yeah.
It's great. Hey, on that note, why don't I'll continue the piece. It's called Simulacrum, and this is from Undercurrents, the music of Jordan Nobles. Again, this is Peter Orman with Green Sense, 93.3 CFMU every Friday from 2 to 3 p.m., and we're talking with Ann Bruce, a lawyer in Ontario.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Well, you're welcome, man. And we'll come back for a couple more comments after some music. If the music comes on. Supposed to. Thank you. Wow, that's a beautiful music of Undercurrents. That's Contact, the group Contact, performing the music of Jordan Nobles. So I'm just going to sign off now. Peter Warman with Green Sense. And thanks for joining me today, Ann Bruce, a lawyer in Hamilton. And do you want to leave any final words for us, Ann?
Yes, I would like to wish everyone a
Merry
Christmas and have a
Kwanzaa. What's a
Kwanzaa?
And okay, well, I'll look it up even more. Thank you. And as well, I want to remind people that there are lots of plays going on right now. You have the Mousetrap is sold out. That's at the Waterdown Theater. And then also 12 Angry Men is at the Hamilton. There's a Hamilton Theater on Queen Street. So if you can get out there, support local, and remember, you vote with every choice made. I'm signing off, Peter Ormond, 93.3 CFMU. See you next Friday, and have a wonderful weekend. Take care.
Of the waiting room here on CFMU 93.3 FM. My name is Lino. I'll be guiding the tunes for the next 2 hours. Hope you can stick around. We're going to start with some air.